If you have your Bibles, go to the book of Numbers. Last night we covered Numbers 8, and I kind of highlighted some of the other chapters. But I'll give you It's going to be hard to do a complete review of last night, because last night, the things we talked about are so powerful that you can't even comprehend what he's describing in chapter 9, chapter 10, chapter 11 for most definite, and chapter 12. You will succumb to those same lusts that happens that literally overtake people, and they don't even realize what's happening. And so, how important is the light of the menorah in our life? Is what chapter 8 is about. So he speaks to Aharon and he says, when you ascend up, and he's going to do what? Trim the lamps, because there's a job to do. They don't just light themselves. There's a job to do. And so even in the five maidens we talked about last night, that when it came time to trim their lamps, because who's the responsibility to do the trimming of the lamp? It's ours individually. When they tried to trim the lamp, nothing happened, because they lost what it took in order to trim the lamp, and that was the oil. So we know we have to maintain the oil, and oil is maintained by our giving of ourselves into the Word. We can't get tired of the manna. You get tired of the manna, you're going to be lacking in oil. You're going to lack in light. And what did they get tired of in Numbers 11? They got tired of the manna. You can't get tired of Yeshua being the bread of life for you, because he is the bread of life. When you get tired of, if you think he's not enough and he didn't teach you correctly, then you're going to always seek something else. And I can assure you that something else is not going to benefit you. It'll always lean more heavily toward the lust of the flesh, always. And he warns us of this. Don't do that. In every case, since I've been a pastor, that's been since officially when I walked on this property, and I officially took this body, was June the 6th, 1987. And I've not seen one case of anybody who's in and out and in and out. In every single case, it's been one reason: their lack of taking in the manna. They always think there's something else. There is nothing else. Now, they didn't lack for anything in the wilderness, but they felt like they lacked. Now, why would you feel like you lack if you're really not lacking for anything, but you feel like you lack? Why would that happen? It's two reasons. Either you crave your past habits, or you crave what you see somebody else doing. And so the lust of the flesh can be led away by the lust of the eye. The eye sees something else and says, why they get to do that and we don't get to do that? And that's what happened to the children of Israel. Remember, there was a mixed multitude. And this mixed multitude that was traveling with Israel, they were more prone to wanting to go back, because that's all they ever knew. This, what they was experiencing right now, was brand new to them. They never experienced anything like they'd seen, but they sure knew that this Yehovah that they were talking about, he was mighty, because no one could perform the miracles that he was performing. So they knew it was something serious. Yet, the appetite of their flesh was overwhelming them, especially when they got up every day of their life. Every day they got up, first day, they gathered this manna. The next day, they gathered the manna. The next day, and on the sixth day, they gathered twice as much, because on the Shabbat, they didn't even have to go out to gather the manna, because they'd supplied them in the sixth day with enough for the Shabbat day. Nobody was planting any seeds. Nobody was tilling any ground. Nobody was picking weeds out. It was provided for them. It was done for them. And so it's almost like you can say they were receiving a handout. But what did they crave was a handout, but it wasn't from Jehovah. So Israel, underneath their slavery, what were they used to eating? What's the meat that they were used to eating? They wanted fish. Because the Nile River runs the length of the entirety of Mitzrayim. It was full and teeming with fish, fresh fish. And so that was the cheapest way they could pay slaves, by giving them a handout, a government subsidy. How many understand we know what that means today? Government subsidy. And so the moment that got cut off, and now it's coming from the ultimate governing body, that being Jehovah, what he's giving them is just this manna. Just this bread. What is this manna? We don't even know what it is. We missed the fish and the onions and the garlic. They were used to that. And so they desired to go back. Because of that, they begin to complain. They begin to grumble and speak things against Jehovah and against his leadership. And Jehovah had enough of it. And he caused the fire to come, the burning, as it's called. The burning came, and when the burning came, it began to consume people on the outskirts, because that's where most of the complaining happens. It happens on the outskirts. The complainers have the least involvement in the community. They're the least involved. Always saying, well, I didn't know that was happening. Nobody told me. And you ask the question, well, where were you last Shabbat? Well, I had something to do. Where were you the Shabbat before that? Well, I had something to do. And this is what we see happen in the 11th chapter. So I'm going to go over some of this. I wrestled with this. This morning I wrestled with it for several hours on what section to cover. Because there's a lot of sections to cover here. A lot. But I put them in your notes. So if you want them, there it is for you. You can go over it the rest of the week as you lead up to the next Torah portion and just get familiar with what's happening in these particular chapters. I'm going to give you the highlighted points real quick. This week's Torah portion is number 36. And it's Baha Alotika. Alotika. And it's Hebrew for when he ascends. And we're dealing with Numbers 8, 1 through Numbers 12, 16. And what we see in chapter 8 is Aaron is commanded to raise light in the lamps of the menorah, and the tribe of Levi is initiated into the service of the sanctuary. That's what we see in chapter 8. So the first four verses, he's commanded him, when you rise to light the menorah, make sure you face the lights toward the table of showbread. The light is there for one reason, and that's to give light to the 12 tribes of Israel, because up to this point, they've been walking in darkness. And how many know we've all walked in darkness? So how do you fix walking in darkness? You got to have the light of the word to shine on you. You can't get tired of the manna. The moment you get tired of the manna, it's going to be nothing but trouble from there on. And so you can literally ask God, Lord, refresh my desire, my craving for your manna, for your word, because I want to desire it like it's brand new to me, like it's the first day I tasted it. Now, there's no complaints about what it would taste like. They all tasted it, and it was good. So it wasn't the taste. It was just so much of it. And it's sort of like going through the Torah portions. I've had people comment to me, it's just so much. Well, I understand it's so much, but it's necessary. It's necessary. Especially when you have little time to get it done. It is a lot. Especially when you haven't spent any time looking at it. Especially when you turn to the first verses in the Bereshit and how can anybody comprehend all this stuff? But how many see what God has been doing? He's been expanding your understanding. He's been challenging your mind to begin to take in this stuff. And that's what it does when you follow Yeshua. He expands your mind with the word. That's why you have to put off the darkness and put on the light. You have to do that because you can't wear both of them. You can't be dressed in half light and half darkness. How many of you know that never works? So you put off the darkness. You put off that lifestyle. You put off that it's no longer a part of who I am. And you put on Messiah. When you put him on and you wear him, you're not trying to take in everything in one setting. Your mind is in tune with him throughout the week. So the Torah is something that throughout the week, if the only thing you're hearing about this Torah portion is right now, then you're not listening careful. It takes all week, every day, for you to take some time to take it in. And it don't have to be a big chunk. Just take in a couple verses. And maybe you can't read all the chapters, especially in this one. There's a lot of reading here. But read something. And so what we do, we break it down for you to have the high points. We know what chapter 8 is about. Chapter 9 is the second Passover is instituted in response to the petition, why should we be deprived? He don't want you deprived. Listen, there's one thing about Yehovah. Every complaint you have, if you'll listen to him, he has an answer. But when your complaint is piled on a complaint, on top of a complaint, on top of a complaint, his wrath is going to be kindled against you, and he has no choice but to judge the situation. And this is what was happening to the children of Israel. Now understand this. They're just preparing to leave. We're not to the 10th chapter yet. 10th chapter, two silver trumpets. Not shofars, two silver trumpets. These trumpets were made specially for setting out camp. It's to let everybody know. Now, when they blow the silver trumpets, you know you either get yourself together, adjust yourself. Well, I'm in the middle of making something. Well, stop what you're doing. The silver trumpets just blown. It's time to get ready. When you hear the silver trumpets blow, where did all the eyes of all of Israel, whether you was in the east, whether you was in the south, whether you was in the west or in the north, where would all the eyes go? Straight to the set apart place to see if the cloud was going to move. If it moved, I don't care what you're doing. Well, I'm milking the goats. Don't milk the goats no more. And so they had a lot. Their days were busy. They had to survive as a people. So there was nobody sitting around doing nothing. This was an active, bustling community of people. But when the silver trumpets blew, they had to be ready to move. And so he distinguishes between the shofar blow, which is the ram's horn, and the silver trumpet blowing, which is different. How many can see that clearly there's a difference here? How many see that? You know, the only thing that's a lot, these things have in common is they can make a distinct sound. That's the common thing. But they look different. One is made from silver, and silver represents the redemption money. The silver represents the price paid. How many understand that? Yosef was sold for silver. He was a shadow of Messiah. Yeshua was sold for silver, and he redeemed all of us. So when this trumpet blows, this is serious business. God's not moving you because he feels like it. It's necessary to move you. Necessary. Amen? So I just wanted to point that out. Clearly there's a difference between the silver trumpet and the ram's horn. And so he makes a distinction. We should make a distinction. And they have different meanings behind them. And so They knew if the enemy was approaching and they heard the silver trumpets blowing, it wasn't time to move. It was time to grab your weapons and get ready. They all knew these things and they understood these things, but they weren't used to it because up to this point, no silver trumpet is blown. So he's explaining that in chapter 10. So we see in 9, we have the Passover that they're going to actually observe for the first time. You say, well, I thought they had Passover when they left Egypt. That wasn't an observance. That was the real event. The observance is an event that happened in the past. Now you're observing it again to remember it. It's a memorial to them now. And so now they're having the first memorial event, and some were not able to do it because they touched the dead corpse. So why should we be prevented? Well, Moshe said, well, let me go to Yehovah on this. We never had this come up yet. Your first observance, you're going to have things come up, right? They never had it happen before because they never had an observance before. They're now just over a year into this thing. Now they see that this is an issue. What do we do? And so Yehovah replies with an answer. If you're unclean because of touching a dead animal, then you can observe the Pesach in the second month. On the same day. And so we see some significant things here because what we see that in the process of this happening, in the process of them observing this second doing of the Passover, because somebody's either traveling to a far place and they weren't able to make it at the time, then in the next following month, he gives them an opportunity on the same day, the 14th day. But then we find what happens is the two silver trumpets is blown on the 20th day of that month. What does that tell you? That tells you something, that the only thing you do keep in that particular part is the Passover lamb, not unleavened bread and all that again. So if you miss it the first time, because we know that Passover is the evening of the 14th, the beginning of the 15th. It immediately brings you, while you're eating, you're actually in, you're ushered into unleavened bread. That's why you have that meal with unleavened bread, because you have to make provision before its event. And you do that in preparing the meal. So that evening, you are now in the 15th. On the same afternoon, that evening, between the two evenings, you go from Passover into unleavened bread. And so on the second time they have it, they're not required to do unleavened bread, because we know that on the 20th day would have only been, they would have been in it for 6 days. 14th to the 20th is only 6, and they leave and silver trumpets blow. So obviously they have the Passover. They remember the blood that was shed. They have the unleavened bread, and then that's the end of it. You don't go through the entirety of that process again on the second time. So what you missed, you missed. And so this is what is being stated in that particular chapter. Now, chapter 10, Elohim instructs Moshe on the procedures for Israel's journey and encampment in the desert, and the people's journey in formation from Mount Sinai, where they had been camped for nearly a year. Think about that. Now he's getting them ready. Now, for the first time, they're actually going to, everything we've been learning, it's for their understanding. Now they have to put it into practice. When the silver trumpets blow, it's on. The Levites that were given charge of the tabernacle, they went right into the process of doing that. You learn that in the 10th chapter. Now in the 11th chapter, the people are dissatisfied with the bread from heaven, the manna, and demand Moses to supply with meat. Moses appoints 70 elders, to whom he imparts of his spirit to assist him in the burdens of governing the people. And this is where the Sanhedrin comes in, which is the 70 that represents the 70 that is assigned there in the 11th chapter. So for sake of reading 9, 10, we're going to go to 11. I'll give you some stuff to read later on today. We'll go to chapter 11. So I was really struggling with this. There's a lot in between here. But this 11th chapter is important that we cover some of this. So if you have your Bibles, go to Numbers 11. So what you're going to do when you get home, you're going to read 9 and 10. And we read 8 last night. If you didn't get last night's, read 8. Understand that the light of the menorah is the only way you and I can come out of darkness. If you take the light away, what do you have? Darkness. It's automatic. There's nothing you can do about that. If we turn all the lights off in this building right now, we're going to be in the dark. You can't stop it. The light is the only thing that keeps the dark out. Nor can you stop it in your personal life. If you take away the light of the Word of God, the Torah, then you're going to be infiltrated with darkness instantly. It's not going to gradually come. It's going to be instant. What happens in your house when you're standing in the room? In my house, my rooms are dark. I mean dark. You get along like this if you're trying to go in to get to the light switch. It's dark. You can't see anything. And so when you walk in your house, and in my house, some of my rooms have double entry. So there's a light switch in the first entry and one in the other one. And if you put the light on here, you can turn it out on the way out on the other side. It just turns them off. And so when we hit the light off in the room, it's dark. It's instant. Why is it instant? Because there's what's missing? The light. The light's missing. In our life, darkness is instant the moment light leaves. What left Adam? The light left Adam, and it was darkness instant. So much that he started to see his own nakedness. He never experienced that before in this entire creation. He never experienced that. Now he's experiencing it. Now he's ashamed of what he's seeing, so he hides himself. But the moment God comes, what happens to darkness? What did he say when he's there? What happens to darkness? He said, there's no darkness at all. There's none. So you don't get partial light and partial darkness. That's no relationship with God. So don't even entertain that type of behavior. If you're walking in darkness, you're absent light. And we're not to think that somehow there's this middle ground of compromise. There is none. He wants to give light in our life. So he don't give partial light. You don't get sort of some of the light. When we light the menorah, we light all the lights. Not just some of them, they're all lit. And he said this in Revelations, that Yeshua, that revelation was, he was amongst the seven lamps, which represented the seven assemblies. And he told some of them from time to time, he said, if you don't start doing what I'm asking you to do, I'm going to remove your lampstand from its spot. But you're not going to compromise. You're not going to have darkness and light. One of them is going to go. The darkness goes, you'll have the light. If you want to keep in darkness, I'll remove the light. And what were they requesting in 11? We tired of this manna. Let's read it together. In verse 1 of chapter 11, Numbers. And it came to be when the people were as complainers, it was evil in the ears of Jehovah. They were as complainers. It was evil in his ears. Because one of the things you have to understand about complainers, what actually happens is it means to mutter under your breath. Now, I know you've experienced this before. So we don't just outright say how we might be upset about something, but we might do it that way. Children do that. Because if they just tell their parents, outright what they're feeling. They get a smack, but they can get away with it by mama. Go clean your room. Some people grown still do that. Grown. Now we think it as being childish. How do you think Yehovah looks at it? Now he the way he fixes this, so we're not any more children that mumble and grumble and mutter under our, so it's, you know, we're barely being heard. And so we think, well, nobody else heard me. It don't take everybody to hear you. It takes Yehovah to hear you. That's all it takes. And so folks will join an assembly, get in a community of people, and when they don't like something, now I know that don't happen here ever, but I still got to preach this because it's the word of Yehovah. But this is what causes a distraction, and let's see what the word says about what the results are. It came to be when the people were as complainers, it was evil in the ears of Yehovah, and Yehovah heard it, and his displeasure burned. Means he had a reaction. His displeasure burned. And the fire of Yehovah burned among them and consumed those in the outskirts of the camp. When Yehovah has a reaction, things happen. You can't stop it. You can't say, hold up, time out, time out, time out. I think there's this video, and I've heard it before where it says, it's something like, hold up, hold up, hold up. Wait a minute, wait a minute, wait a minute. And you're trying to stop what's about to happen, but you know it's too late, but you're begging. Wait up, hold up, hold up. Well, that was what was happening here, and it was too late. Because once Yehovah reacted to the complaining, the fire of Yehovah was released to the outskirts of the camp. Now, who was in the outskirts of the camp? Who would that have been? Well, naturally, we know that on the outskirts of the camp, which would have been on the perimeters of all 12 tribes of Israel, would have been the foreigners and the sojourners and the mixed multitude. They would have been mixed out. They'd have been divided equally amongst them. Now, those foreigners and mixed multitude weren't being ostracized in any way, but they were slow learners. They had not had this given to them firsthand. This had to come through what was actually being spoken of now. Now, not all of them participated in this, but the majority of the problem came from those who didn't have this understanding. They weren't native born to Israel. And so all of a sudden, what happens when you start complaining is other people see it. When you mumble something, and there's two ways to mumble. To yourself, which Yehovah hears, or you mumble to others, and you cause them to mumble. That all together is a separate deal. Because if you're going to make a complaint, speak loudly to Yehovah. Don't mumble. He already knows what you're thinking and what you're saying, but be man enough about it to say, hey, Yehovah, I don't like this. Well, I would never do that. Exactly, you would never do it. But you'll mumble. What's the difference? The reaction from Yehovah will be the same. But he says he'd rather you speak plainly to him than to mumble or to complain. This should be important to us because we're going to see right away that Moshe actually complains. Because complaining is contagious. Let's read it together. And the people cried out to Moshe, and Moshe prayed to Yehovah, and the fire died down. The moment you get in a crisis, who do they pray? Who do they go to? They go to Moshe, straight back to the very thing that they said they don't want to be a part of. Moshe represented God's instructions. So the very thing you say you don't want to be a part of now, and you're complaining about it, when you get in a crisis, what's the first thing you're going to go back to? You go right back to Moshe and say, Moshe, we're in trouble. And that's what they did. We see them going right back to him. And the people cried out to Moshe, pray to Yehovah. Moshe prayed to Yehovah, and the fire died down. Then he called the name of that place Tevria, because the fire of Yehovah had burned among them. It was because the fire burned. That word in the Strong's in the Hebrew means to burn. It means burning. It literally means burning. Then he called the name of that place Tevria, because the fire of Yehovah had burned among them. And the mixed multitude who were in their midst lusted greatly. That's why I made a reference to the mixed multitude. So it initiated with the mixed multitude. They lusted greatly. What were they lusting for? They were lusting for their old life. They were lusting for what they had in the past. They had forgotten that Yehovah brought all these plagues that they witnessed with their eyes. They had forgotten that their firstborn survived because of the blood that was put on the doorpost. They had forgotten that already. Now, what did they just get finished being encouraged in the ninth chapter? What did he just get finished telling about the ninth chapter about Passover? As a reminder, he says, as a reminder, I want you to now observe the Passover. I want you to observe it. You're not doing the original, but he's reminding them, don't forget about the Passover. And then we go two chapters later, and they're lusting greatly because they missed what they had. They forgot that their firstborn children survived from this God that they're now complaining to. This Most High that they're now disgruntled with, and they're murmuring and complaining. They'd forgotten already. We went from chapter 9, chapter 10, the alarm sounds. When it sounds, there's a consternation in the camp. People are moving. Things are going. They're getting ready. And all of a sudden, they start their march. And the first thing they start to do in their march is complain. Now, they got to leave from the wilderness of Sinai to the wilderness of Paran. That's as far as they get. You look on a map, take some time to go look at your Bible maps, you'll see that's not very far. I mean, by the time we line them up and put them in order, the first part of the group gets there and you still got to march the rest of the way there. It's not very far. And they quickly start to realize, they start looking around and they start lusting greatly. So the children of Israel also wept again and said, who is giving us meat to eat? Now, this is very important. Let me tell you why they did it. Because, first of all, the only reason they asked this question, who is giving us meat to eat? They wanted meat. They had meat. They had thousands of animals. They had meat. So it wasn't about meat. It was about who's going to give us a handout. And the other thing, they're looking at Aaron. Why Aaron gets to eat meat, we got to eat this manna. Why does he get to do stuff that we're not getting to do? You see what complaining does? It starts to snowball on you. Before you know it, you can't control it as much as you think you can. Well, I didn't say much. You said enough. You said enough. And so Yehovah, his displeasure was kindled against them, and he burned on the inside, and he released this fire. We don't know how many died, but they had to bury him. It was enough to make a mass grave. They had to bury all these dead people. Now think about what's being said here. Israel also wept again and said, who is giving us meat to eat? And they did it again, meaning this wasn't the first time. So what were they doing? They were listening to the complainers, which was a group of people that were a mixed multitude that was on the outskirts of the camp. That's where they would be. Structural-wise, we know that's where they would be. And so what happens, that complainer starts to infiltrate through the camp, and before you know it, Israel starts to say again, who's going to give us meat? Now, the reason they did that, because they started to look around and say, well, who's the only one to eat meat is Aaron and his sons. We're giving it to them as sacrifice, a portion that they got to eat. But all they're eating is what? This manna. All we're getting is this manna. They forgot that the weight on Aaron's life was great. Great weight. I mean, if he did anything and the slightest thing wrong, he died that very day. They forgot that. They were only concerned about He gets to eat meat and we don't. Who's going to give us meat? We remembered the fish which we ate without cost in Mizraim. Without cost? Are you kidding me? See what happens when you start complaining? You forget the pressures of the slavery to sin that you lived in. You forget how dark it was. The moment you start craving what you used to have, you forget how dark it was. You only see the good times. You highlight all the good times you had. Man, we had fun over there. We had fun on that night out. You start highlighting those things and talking about them. There was nothing fun about living in darkness. And if one thing would have went wrong, your life would have been snuffed out and you'd have lost out with God forever. How's that sound? But you didn't. Thank God that you get to be a part of a community. This ought to be the happiest time of our life when we get to come together and we get to spend time together. It ought to be the happiest part of our life. And we got to quit looking at someone else and think, well, they get to do this. Why don't I get to do it? And they're speaking of Aaron, because he got to eat the meat of the sacrifices, some of the sacrifices that was brought. Remember, how many cattle did Aaron own? None. How much land did he own? None. Do you understand the point? So it had to be a gift to him through the tithe. He had nothing. But we soon forget the process that God set up, how he structured everything. We forget that, and we start thinking about the fish. The fish was a handout. The Mitzrites would hand out fish. It was cheap. They can get fish and just give them a fish and they send them on their way. They'll keep making bricks and clay. That's what they're going to do. They're slaves. They're not keeping the Torah. They're not doing anything. They're doing nothing. We got them under our thumb. And what are they remembering? When they were under the thumb of the Mitzrites, that's what they're craving. Can you imagine that? That's what complaining does. It gets you to the point where you just soon be in the world again. Think about that, how sad that is. Let me just tell you, I have no desire to be in the world ever again. I have no desire to go back and do what I did before. What's the point in it? It didn't help me then. It's not going to help me in the future. The only hope I have is to stay in the light. Numbers 8, if I don't stay in the light, I'm in trouble. And that means from this day on, I got to stay in the light. You don't get in the light and then you got light it's just light on you. The light can go out. He told us it can go out. The if and then comes into play. If we don't do what he said, the light can go out. If you don't have oil in your lamp, you can be a maiden. You can be a virgin. And still, when the bridegroom comes, he says, you know, there he is. Trim the lamp. You're trying to trim. Nothing's happening because you didn't put anything in. We learned all this last night. We remember the fish that we ate without cost in Mizraim, the cucumbers and the melons and the leeks and the onions and the garlic. Wow. That's what they're remembering. All these cucumbers and melons and leeks and onions and garlic. But now our being is dried up. There is naught to look at but this manna. Now that's crossing the line right there. There's nothing to look at but this manna that you do nothing for. Remember that. You do nothing for. You get up and there it is for you. It's provided for you. So what was God doing? He was providing them two things. And this is important. Two things were being provided for them. He was providing them the cloud, which acts as a covering. What happens to a cloud when it covers the sun in the middle of the day? What happens? It brings a comfort to you because the heat is cut off by the cloud. That's what Jehovah was providing them. He was the cloud that covered them in the wilderness. And then he provided them food. He provided them the light. Everything they needed, they had. There was nothing they lacked by those two things. Just the fact that he covered them. Let me tell you, I hear people all the time saying this. We're out and it's in the heat, especially this time of the year. And all of a sudden we get these thunderstorms that pop up, something like you hear outside now. And all of a sudden that thunderstorm cloud will move and it'll get between you and the sun, and everybody on the boat says, man, it sure feels better. It feels so much better that We got a little relief from the heat. This is what they had constantly. They constantly had this covering from Jehovah. It never left. There it was. The only time the covering moved, they had to move with the covering. When he moved, you want to follow the cloud. You want to be behind it. Get where the cloud's going. And then they had constant bread. It was constant. The bread, Yeshua claims to be the bread of life. He's the living bread. The bread represents the word, the logos. It represents everything that God speaks out. It represents that. They had those two elements, yet they was complaining about no meat. Now the manna was like coriander seed and its appearance like the appearance of bdellium. And people went about and gathered it, ground it and millstoned or beat it into mortar and cooked it in a pot and made cakes of it. And its taste was like the taste of cakes baked with oil. And when the dew fell on the camp at night, the manna fell on it. And Moshe heard the people weeping throughout their clans, each man at the door of his tent, and the displeasure of Jehovah burned exceedingly. In the eyes of Moshe, it was evil. Because what happened? By now, it starts on the outskirts, then it starts to go throughout the clan. When it starts going throughout the clan, then it's like a plague that just spreads all over. We're so tired of this manna, but it's the only thing that's going to keep you out of darkness. Remember that. It's the thing that keeps you out of the darkness. And he's providing for them. He's giving them a way to be provided for. We see that happen throughout this reading. We see him explaining this to them so they understand it. Verse 11, so Moshe said to Jehovah, why have you done evil to your servant? Now Moshe, the difference in Moshe is he just goes right before Jehovah and he says to him out loud, not a mumble, not a complaint, in the same sense of the word as they were. He says to Jehovah, why have you done this evil to me? Why have I not found favor in your eyes to put the burden of all these people on me? Let me tell you something. As much as you don't think it, but your leaders go through difficulty with the burdens of the people many times, over and over and over again, because you go home, you're responsible for you, you can settle that issue and go to bed. But when you're responsible for other people, that in your dreams their faces pop up and you're dreaming about them because you know that the life they're living, they're in a crisis and they won't fix it. And you bear that burden, you get up and you're crying out to Jehovah, God, do something, somehow. You got to stir their hearts. And I find myself doing that night after night. Stir their hearts, open their eyes to see, because what's coming is not going to be pretty for them. It's going to be difficulty. That they won't, some of them survive it, they won't survive it. And when you know that, it's not easy to just get up every day and think everything's fine. You still feel it. You cope with that. You cope with that realization. This is what was happening to Moshe. He said, all these people, why have you brought this evil against me? Now listen to the rest of his complaint to Jehovah. He heard them weeping. And Moshe said it was evil. So Moshe said to Jehovah, why have you done evil to your servant? And why have I not found favor in your eyes to put the burden of all these people on me? Was it I who conceived all these people? They're not my children. Was it I who brought them forth? That you should say to me, carry them in your bosom? As a foster father carries a nursing child to the land which you swore to their fathers? Is it my responsibility to carry all these babies? Because to this point, Moshe said they're acting like a bunch of nursing babies. Let me tell you what nursing babies do. They cry and scream when they're not getting nursed. We have one about yay high. Her name's Sailor Hope. And me and Charlotte been keeping her. And let me tell you, when she is not getting what she wants, she lets us know in her way, in the sailor way. And she screams and claws and kicks her legs. And you can settle it as soon as that bottle comes. So I always tell them, get the bottle ready ahead of time. Ain't no sense in saying, oh, she's hungry, and then it takes 30 minutes to get the bottle ready. Get it ready ahead of time. We got to warm it up. Forget warming it up. Let's get her now. So my idea is different than some folks. You know, I always tell them, where the bottle? Why we didn't have it? And I get, shh, shh, shh. I'd get me a bottle belt. I'd load that puppy up. And you're ready to go. There's always ways to calm the screaming down. Sometimes I feel like I need a battle belt here. But how many can see he covers all this stuff? This is normal things that you're gonna feel this. Not you're gonna feel that way. When he takes you out of darkness and now he's giving you light, and now you actually see everything in your life that you don't want to deal with, regardless, he's still putting the light on. He's saying, you got to deal with this today or tomorrow, one day. And you get tired of seeing that, you almost want to go back in the darkness. I don't have to see it. I don't have to deal with it. I don't have to do it right now. We procrastinate as believers so much that it causes displeasure with Jehovah. Why procrastinate? Because he's going to keep putting light on you. And if you're going to a place where the light's not being constantly put on you, I can assure you it's the wrong place. Because the Word of God should constantly put light in our life to make sure that we don't get relaxed in what we're doing. Especially when it's not adhering to the principles of Jehovah. We'll get relaxed in it. And so what he does, Moshe is saying, listen, we got to get this together. So he's letting God know how he feels. And so God makes an adjusting part here in the 11th chapter. We see what he does. Was it I who conceived all these people? Was it I who brought them forth, that you should say to me, carry them in your bosom, as a foster father carries a nursing child, to the land which you swore to their fathers? Where am I to get meat to give all these people? For they weep before me, saying, give us meat to eat. Again, let me emphasize, if they wanted meat, they had meat. There was thousands of animals that was with them in this camp. And they could have had meat, but to get meat for themselves, what they had to do? They couldn't sacrifice it in the field. Remember, we learned that. They'd had to go through the process of mumbling and grumbling, bringing that lamb before the priest, and share it there, and then they can have meat. But they didn't want that. They want to skip that process. We just want meat. We want a handout. So they're about to get meat. But don't look at this as a blessing. By no means. What they get is not a blessing. Yet it appears to be a blessing. But it's no blessing. It's a curse. He's going to give them a curse for their complaining. But it appears that it's wrapped up in a blessing. Because they get so much quail, you think, man, that's a wonderful blessing. I know I'm doing what God wants me to do now because I'm blessed. Look at all the quail I got. And let me tell you, some people, they'll bank on that quail thing as the blessings of God, when in fact it was always a curse. It was never meant to be a blessing whatsoever. Where am I to get the meat to give these people? For they weep before me, saying, give us meat. And I am unable to bear all these people alone because the burden is too heavy for me. And if you are doing this to me, kill me. Please kill me if I have found favor in your eyes, and let me see my evil. Let me tell you, Moshe, on this day, he was done. He got to the point, I can't do this no more. You know, what else am I to do? How am I to get through this? Then Jehovah said to Moshe, gather me 70 men of the elders of Israel, whom you know to be elders of the people and officers over them, and bring them to the tent of appointments, and let them stand there with you. He gets 70 people and brings them there, the elders of the people, the leaders. And now they're standing there with Moshe. And I shall come down and speak with you there, and shall take of the spirit that is on you and put it on them. Think about that. I'll take of the spirit that's on you and put it on them. Same thing happened with us. This is nothing under the renewed writings. The same spirit that was on Yeshua is now put on us. That's why he says, I won't leave you comfortless. I'll go, and when I go, the Spirit's going to come. He said, it didn't come until after he was ascended up on high. You wait until Jerusalem until it comes, because the same Spirit that's on me, the same thing that helped me since the time he was baptized by John, the Spirit came on him, and that same Spirit that led him, guided him, kept him in the Torah, kept him in the truth, is the same Spirit that comes on us. So we can't claim Yeshua without his set-apart Spirit being on us. It's impossible to claim him without certain set-apart spirit. Many people do that. They claim him with no set-apart spirit, no teacher, no comforter, nothing to guide them. And so now it's just constantly complaining about what you don't have, what he wants you to do. I can tell you, when set-apart spirit is upon you and you allow the operational presence of God to actually do its job that it's been given to do, you don't let yourself get by with nothing. It don't matter who's watching. You don't let yourself get by because he's watching. He sees all. He knows all. And so you'll quickly fix it and get it straight because you know it's the only way. You can't be in darkness and light at the same time. If you want to turn the light out, what's going to come immediately? Darkness. What would they were requesting? We don't want this cloud. We don't want this provision. We want to go back and get fish and garlic and cucumbers and melons and leeks. We want that. We want a handout. Because if they wanted meat, they had meat. Every one of them had meat. So that's not what they really wanted. What they wanted was somebody to do it for them. And so what does the New Testament church come along? And they say, well, I don't have to do anything. Yeshua did it for me. Same mentality. And we're going to see what he does with that mentality. It's non-scriptural to have that mentality. We have to engage in the community. We have to be a part in this community. We have to actually do the part that he's called us to do. We have to be active. Faith is an action word. It's not a non-action word. Faith is an action word. And without faith, you can't even please Elohim. So without faith, you don't please him. So faith has to have action. You have to actually put action to what your claim is. You can lay claim by words, but without action, you have no faith whatsoever. And so we see that happen many times when he was teaching his disciples about faith, what real faith was. The woman who had the issue of blood, she had real faith. She put it into action. She said, if I can but touch the tzitzit, I'll be made whole. And she got to the tzitzit. She got to the tzitzit. How many understand? He didn't bring the tzitzit to her. She got to him. She had to paw and crawl to get through the crowd, but she got to the tzitzit. And she didn't care who noticed. Now, she was unclean. She was actually in a state as if she was in nidah because she had a discharge. But you think that bothered her? You think that cost? She spent her whole entire life, every dollar she had, she spent. And she spent her whole life being ostracized and pushed out. But she said, you know what? I'm not staying out anymore. I'm not settling for this lifestyle no more. I'm not settling anymore. She pushed through the crowd regardless of what they thought. She didn't care what anybody was saying about her. She got to the tzitzit, which represents the Torah or the commands of Yehovah. And when she got a hold to him, what happened to darkness? It had to go. Immediately. Immediately it had to go. The darkness in her life was representing the discharge, the uncleanness that she had. Same thing with all of us. But here we have a group of people who have the light being shed, put in their lives. Where's the menorah pointed to? To the 12 loaves. He's trying to give light. He's trying to we exercise it. We have to make the connection from the light to the man of the bread. And who was the manna that came down as represented for us? Who was that manna? Yeshua. Are you tired of Yeshua? You won't have people say that, not like that, because that's really harsh way to say it, but they're really tired of him because they don't do what he says. They don't do what he says. So they'll mumble. That's called complaining. You mumble about it. How many parents ever had your children, you told them to go do something, and on the way to their room, they, you said, what you said? Because now you're really mad that they did that. It just gets to you, don't it? Well, if you think it gets to you, what do you think God thinks about when we do it? When we're dissatisfied with what he's actually provided for us. What did he provide? A covering. And he provided the manna. He provided our covering and our manna. And he done that for us because he loves us and he cares about us. Amen? Verse 17, and I shall come down and speak with you there, and shall take of the spirit that is on you, and put it on them, and they shall bear the burdens of the people with you, so that you do not bear it yourself alone. Go to 1 Timothy. First Timothy chapter 6, we'll start at verse 1. 1 Timothy chapter 6, start at verse 1. Let those who are servants under a yoke regard their own master worthy of all respect. Let me ask you a question. What yoke are we to take on? As a community of believers in Yeshua, what yoke are we to take on? Because he says, take my yoke upon you and learn of me. So if he told us to take the yoke and we put it on us and we learn of him, you have to understand that we're not just free agents running around doing what we want to do. Nor should the community be that way. You shouldn't have people, well, I'm just going to decide how I want to do it. There's structure to the community, to the assembly, right? But the one who won't commit to the community will always live on the outskirts and be the one who instigates the complaining through the rest of the clans of the tribes. It's what happens every time. It's been my experience. I've witnessed it. I've watched it over the years. It's exactly what happens. And if you take heed to anything someone says that's operating in that fashion, it's a seed sown in you, and it's just a matter of time. It comes up, and if you're not strong enough in God, it'll grow and bear fruit in your life, and before you know it, you'll see everybody else is the problem, but you won't see that what caused it. Am I saying the truth or not? It's what happens. This is exactly what you witness constantly. But watch what he says in 1 Timothy chapter 6. Let those who are servants under a yoke regard their master worthy of all respect, lest the name of Elohim and his teaching be blasphemed. If you don't think the structure of the assembly is correct, and which we find happening in Numbers 11, this ain't right. The silver trumpets blow. What happened to the Levites? They say, wow, we got to take it down. They didn't do that. They got their stuff together and they started moving. First to peel off, Yehuda, Zebulun, Issachar, they peeled out. You think that those in the south, what are they going to do? We can't stop, because if we don't peel out, they peeled out, we're going to be left behind. They got going, well, what about in the west? Ephraim, so when they hit the west, Ephraim stood up and said, it's time for us to go, boys, get it together, let's go. And they moved out. And then we had the north. And the ark is moving. It's moving now. You understand, we have a lot of people. They're going to get in a column. Can you imagine a column of 3 million people? Let's just say they're 50 wide, 50 people wide. Can you imagine how long that column of people is going to be? Can you imagine the dust from all those people and the animals walking at the same time that it kicks up? It's going to be uncomfortable. I want you to understand, don't picture in your mind they had this paved highway in the wilderness, and they just all got on this nice manicured lawns on the side, and they have white lines to follow. None of that happened. They're in a desert plain, and they might be on a trail that somebody else used, and they're headed somewhere. They're going from Sinai to the wilderness of Paran. They're going from one wilderness to another wilderness, all within that same area, because all it stretches out, the Sinai Peninsula stretches out. So this thing's elongated. So in actuality, they're still in the Sinai Peninsula, but they're in the wilderness of Paran. That's where they're headed to. And all of this is taking place during this time. And you have all these people that are getting ready to march out, and they're not understanding that. And we have these same commands given to us in the renewed writings that we have to put this yoke on us. And sometimes when you put the yoke on you of Yeshua, he's the dominant. He's going to do this, and you're going to drag your feet, and you're going to be just drug along. What happens when you get drug along for so long? You start doing what? Complaining. Or you can get with the program that he institutes and say, you know what? I'm not going to fight with God. I don't win that battle. Why start that fight? And so what we see the children of Israel doing is exactly what we're being instructed in here in Timothy. He says, and those who have believing masters, let them not disregard them because they are brothers, but rather serve them because they are believing and beloved ones. Those receiving of the good service in return, teach and urge these matters. So we want to be participating at the right level, right? So if I'm teaching the Torah, you're not going to be teaching something else. You don't say, well, the Lord's leading me to this. Because what it sounds like, it's hostile. And when you hear that come, when anybody gets up, it don't matter who it is, and it's completely opposite of where God's had us, you put a question there and you say, okay, something's wrong with that. Instantly. How do we know that? I'm reading it to you. Where I'm reading from? The renewed writings. But we don't have a clue what Timothy 6 means because we didn't get the understanding until we read 11. We have to read 11. Now, it's hard to make that connection just because. Right? But when you read it slow and you say, God, open my understanding, you're brought to it. Why? Because there's key words that we're about to find out that's very important. And those who have believing masters, let them not disregard them because they are brothers, but rather serve them because they are believing and beloved ones, those receiving of the good service, in return, teach and urge these matters. If anyone teaches differently and does not agree to the sound words, those of the Master Yeshua Messiah, and the teachings which is in accordance to reverence, he is puffed up, understanding none at all. So how much do you believe that comes out of their mouth? None of it. Hence, that person is a liar. How many see this? But is sick about questionings and verbal battles, from which come envy, strife, slander, and wicked suspicions. How many see this? Worthless disputes of men of corrupt minds and depraved of the truth, who think that reverence is a means of gain, withdraw from such. You don't visit, you don't check on, you don't do anything. You withdraw from such. Why would you deal with them when Yehovah can't deal with them? Are you better than set apart spirit? Somehow, some way, you think if I just show I'm interested, maybe it'll help them. You can't help them because Yehovah can't help them. They have to experience the isolation of darkness and then crave the light to come back and have teshuva. That's the process. We don't get to create the process. We don't get to say, well, I just want to be nice. You want to be nice? Make sure you're nice to what the master says first. And preach those matters. Don't create your own matters to preach. Are y'all here? Verse 6, but reverence with contentment is great gain. Reverence with contentment is great gain. This is powerful. Because what are we dealing with? We're dealing with an irreverence, and they're not content in the wilderness. They don't like what they got. They don't like the fact that they get up every single day and the light of the word, the manna, is then given to them, and it's dispelling darkness out of their life a little bit at a time. They want meat. We want something else. Reverence and contentment gives great gain. You want to succeed in serving Jehovah? Reverence and contentment gives great gain. If you want to have success in your relationship, you want to have success in your community, in your coming together, reverence and contentment brings great gain. Verse 7, for we brought naught into the world, and it is impossible to take anything out. Remember that. What did we start with? Nothing. And we're going to have nothing going out. The only thing we're going to have is that light. That light that's given to you is what you're going to have. But why do we have to have things after the light is taken away? In Genesis, what happened? Man had to start satisfying his appetite, constantly satisfying his appetite, to the point that they looked around the land and said, well, you know what? We'll just take the land over. And it didn't take long. There were dominant groups of people that basically took the land over because there was never enough. You have always having to satisfy yourself. We brought naught into the world, and it is impossible to take anything out. Verse 8 is very key. Listen to it careful. When we have food and covering, we shall be satisfied with these. What did they have in Numbers 11? They had food and covering. They had both, and so do we have both. Why? Because Yeshua taught Torah principles, and he taught them to Shaul, and Shaul taught them to Timothy, and he's addressing Timothy in his first letter. He says, listen to me, don't get confused. This is not something new that we're doing. We're still following the Numbers 11 account. They had food and covering. How many see that? Beautiful for our understanding. Israel had covering of the cloud of Yehovah, as well as food that Yehovah supplied through manna. They should have been satisfied with these. They should have been satisfied with them. No different than we should be satisfied with what he's provided for us. The moment you're not satisfied with where your life's at, you're going to start complaining about it. He's been good to us. He's been mindful of us. Now, when does he provide manna? Every day. You don't get manna one time, and then it's the end of it. You don't have to eat manna again. It's the everlasting manna. You know, you eat one part of it, you don't have to eat it again. They had to have it every day to survive. Same thing with the Word of God. You have to have it every day to survive, because if you don't feed on the manna from heaven, every day you have to have Yeshua, every day. Every day to survive, you have to have it. To think you can go a day without him is foolish. It's very foolish. Don't ever practice that behavior. We need him every day. Let me tell you when we really want him in a crisis. What did they go right back to when the burning started? Moshe, Moshe, oh Moshe! Let me tell you, there are going to be people go back to Moshe when the burning starts. Trust me. Remember, write that down in your notes. You can go ahead and put pastor said, because it's going to be a fact. There are going to be people going back to Moshe when the burning starts. Why? Because when the crisis always, when you get in a crisis, you don't see any way you can get yourself out of it. So you always go back. And what did they do? The first thing they started hollering, Moshe. So what did Moshe do? Moshe went to Yehovah. Because what is Moshe going to do? What do you think I'm going to do? You think I didn't father you? I'm carrying all 3 million crying babies that want bottles to drink, and they have manna that's been provided for them. every day of their life. They have food and covering, just like you and I. There's nothing that you lack in serving Jehovah under through Yeshua. There's nothing that you lack that you can't have. Every person here, you have it. So we've made excuses for people. We talk about where they grew up. We talk about the stuff they don't have. We talk about their education. We talk about their upbringing. We blame their parents. We blame everybody else but the person that's actually not being disgruntled toward Jehovah. It's always somebody else's, a generation before them. It's their fault. Let me tell you, if you're here and you hear the sound of my voice, I'm going to explain it to you very careful. You have food and covering under Yeshua. There's nothing you lack to be successful in serving him and living for him and ultimately accomplishing everything that he's purposed for your life. There's nothing you lack. Quit making excuses for ourselves and for everybody else. Well, you know, if we'd only, you know, we make excuses. Oh, maybe if we go visit them again, they'll come back. They'll come back when they repent and get back in the light of the menorah, they'll come back. That's when it's going to happen. When you get the menorah shining on the 12 walls, that's where you see the table of showbread. Until then, it's in darkness. There's no light in that double cube area of called the set-apart place. There's no light in there. It's dark. When Aharon goes up and he ascends to light the menorah, make sure it shines toward the table, he said, because it's necessary. And if you take Yeshua out of our lives, we're in darkness, all of us. There's no hope for us. But everything you need to accomplish and be successful has been given to you because we have it. And we see it in verse 8. When you have food and covering, we shall be satisfied with these. But those wishing to be rich fall into trials and a snare and into many foolish, injurious lusts which plague men in ruin and destruction. The moment what God provides for you is not enough. Remember, whatever he provides for you, it's enough. Be satisfied with it. The moment you're not satisfied, you got to go outside of God's provision, and then you start lusting for more and more and more, and before you know it, it takes you out of the picture. And now you don't have time for God. You don't have time to make service. You don't have time to read your Bible because you got other stuff to tend to. You got so much stuff to do, and if you don't make it happen, it won't happen. You know how many people have said that? I've heard people say that. If I don't make it happen, it's not going to happen. What about what Jehovah provides for you? Why don't you let him take charge and be the master in our life and actually accept what he's provided for us? The food and the covering we have. And there's nothing we lack with food and covering. How many thank God for his word? Well, let's go back to Numbers 11. See if we can. I think I had a card. What was my card? 70 minutes? Amen. They went, no. Seven. I received 70. Verse 18, and say to the people, set yourselves apart for tomorrow, and you shall eat meat, because you have wept in the hearing of Jehovah, saying, who has given us meat to eat? For it was well with us in Mitzrayim, and Jehovah shall give you meat, and you shall eat. Now remember, don't count this as a blessing. It's no blessing. Now it appears to be a blessing, because the giver is Jehovah, and it's enough meat to feed all these people? Think about this. You are going to eat not one day, nor 2 days, nor 5 days, nor 10 days, nor 20 days, but for a new moon of days, 1 month, until it comes out of your nostrils and becomes an abomination to you because you have rejected Jehovah, who is among you, and have wept before him, saying, why did we come up out of Mitzrayim? He said, I'm going to give you so much meat to eat that it's going to come out your nose. For 1 month, you'll have Now understand that when these quail came, they came in a heavy way. There was no mistaking, it was an act of Almighty that did it. And Moshe said, the people in whose midst I am are 600,000 men on foot, and you say I give them meat to eat for a new moon of days? Could flocks and herd be slain for them to be sufficient for them? Or could all fish of the sea be gathered together for them to be sufficient for them? And Yehovah said to Moshe, is the arm of Yehovah too short? Now see whether my word meets you or not. Think about that. He had to let Moshe was shocked. Moshe was shocked. He said, did I hear you right, Yehovah? Did I just hear that you said you're going to give them meat for a month? If we killed all the animals, would it be sufficient enough? We took all the fish out to sea. Because Moshe, he started to see the vastness of this group of people. And it was hard for him. It was difficult for him. He was trying to maintain this understanding with Yehovah. He knew the promise was given, but they weren't there yet. But he was overcome by what he was seeing. Yet Yehovah says, This is the man he's talking to, the one who threw his rod down, became a serpent, he took it back up again. The one who touched the water with his rod and became blood. The one who spoke frogs to come and there was in every compartment in Mitzrayim. The one who brought flies, the one who brought the hail, the one, all these plagues, the killing of the firstborn, all of that he witnessed with his eyes. The one who came to the Sea of Reeds and he stretched out his hand and said, see the salvation of Yehovah. And it split up. They walked across on dry ground. That same Moshe is saying, God, are you here? Am I hearing what you're saying? Am I correct in what you're saying? Is it possible for you to do what you just said? I'm not going to give him, it would have been reasonable if he gave him meat for a day. But he gave him meat for a whole month till it's coming out their nose, meaning more than enough. And it would be an abomination to them. When I get finished with you, you won't even want to see a quail. And we get that away. We'll overeat and we'll say, man, I don't want to eat no more food. You don't even want, even though it's good, you don't want no more of that. You want something different. Anybody ever been there? My dad don't like cornbread to this day. Because they gave him too much cornbread. He tells that story all the time. He says, I don't want corn. I don't like cornbread. Mama said, we have cornbread. I don't like cornbread. He tells the same story every time there's cornbread. Because he despises cornbread for a reason. And so you can get like that. Well, they're about to get like this. So can you imagine every person? How many is familiar with a bushel? We're familiar with bushels, right? Now, bushels when we were younger were smaller bushels. Remember this bushel? That's a bushel. Then it goes from bushels to champagne. And we're not talking about lugs. We're talking about bushels. So a bushel, you can approximately put about 30 pounds or so in it. So I want you to imagine every person picks up 50 bushels each of quail. And then they had to clean them themselves. What they would do, they would split the quail. They would get the feathers off and split it in half and put it out in the sun. And they would get it dried. Because they were experts at drying meat to make it last long. Because we know it's not going to last. It's going to do what? It's going to spoil. It's meat. And so they had to tend. So they were tired of it. They were tired of plucking feathers. They were tired of splitting quail. They were tired of fooling with it. They were tired of eating it. They would eat and it was just coming out their nostrils. So much of it. You want meat? I'll give you meat. This is what was happening to them. You're going to eat, not one day, not 2 days, not 5 days, not 10 days, nor 20, but a new moon of days until it comes out of your nostrils and becomes an abomination to you because you have rejected Yehovah who is among you and have wept before him saying, why did we come up out of Mitzrayim? And Moshe said, the people in whose midst I am is 600,000 men on foot, and you have said, give them meat to eat for a new moon of days? Could flocks and herds be slain for them to be sufficient for them, or could all fish of the sea gather together for them to be sufficient for them? And Jehovah said to Moshe, is the arm of Jehovah too short? Now see whether my word meets you or not. And Moshe went out and spoke to the people the words of Jehovah, and he gathered 70 men of the elders of the people and placed them around the tent. And Jehovah came down in a cloud and spoke with him and took the spirit that was upon him and placed the same upon the 70 elders. And it came to be when the spirit rested on them that they prophesied and did not continue. They prophesied. And we go, Shaul talks about this very thing. He said, I would that you all prophesy. But you should desire the best gift is to prophesy. He said, even though you speak with tongues, he says it's not the best unless you interpret. Because the interpretation of tongues is actually like prophesying, because prophecy is important. And so they prophesy. And now why are they prophesying to the people? The people is amazed because the only one actually doing this up to this point is Moshe. However, two men had remained in the camp, and the names of was Eldad and Medad, and the spirit rested upon them. Now they were gathered among those listed, but did not go out of the tent, and they prophesied in the camp. And a young man ran and informed Moshe and said, Eldad and Medad are prophesying in the camp. And Yehoshua, son of Nun, Moshe's assistant from his young youth, answered and said, Moshe, my master, forbid them. And Moshe said to them, are you jealous for my sake? Oh, that all the people of Jehovah were prophets, and that Jehovah would put his spirit upon them. Can you imagine that? Could you imagine if, instead of us sitting back saying stuff like, man, I sure wish I could remember the scripture like Pastor. Do you know how God accepts that when you say that? Even though you might not mean it in any harmful way. You know what he says? Well, what's your problem? Why aren't you doing it? I don't forbid you from doing it. Why don't you get there and get it done? Why don't you give yourself over to the time necessary for it to happen in your life? It's like people want us to play musical instruments and they talk about it. It'll never happen until you pick it up and you start doing it. And then once you start, you got to spend time with it. And it's going to take some of your time from other things that you're so used to doing. And you're good at that, but you don't want to give time to this. You're never going to be good at it unless you do that. And so this is what he's saying here. He says, and Moshe is saying, Don't be jealous of me. If somebody desires that, let them go ahead and do it. Because he knows the time it's going to take in order for that to happen. And that person will be better off if they take that time necessary. But two of them out of 70 stayed. That shows you the results of what you have today. You have 70 who stood up and prophesied when the Spirit came on. But after that, it ended. They went back doing the same thing they were doing, but two stayed. And they continued in it. Why? Because they were hungry for it. And even Joshua, the son of Nun, said, Master, should they still do this? And he told him, he said, remember, he's young. He's his servant from youth, but he's training him. He's training Yehoshua to understand these principles and how important they'll be for his life, because ultimately, Yehoshua is going to be taking over the task. And Moshe returned to the camp, both he and the elders of Israel, and a wind went forth from Jehovah, and it brought quail from the sea and let them fall beside the camp about a day's journey. A day's journey. That's how far they fell beside the camp. On this side and about a day's journey on the other side and all around the camp, about 2 cubits above the surface of the ground. About 2 cubits is about 3 foot deep. Can you imagine quails 3 foot deep? A day's journey on this side of the camp and a day's journey on that side. And there it was. The people just had to start gathering up. They was grabbing them handfuls, raking them into bushels, about 50 bushels a person. Can you see that when Jehovah says he's going to do something, his hand is not too short? If he's going to do it, he's going to do it. Now, people looked at this man. He blessed him with quail. It was no blessing. This was a curse to Israel. It was a curse to them. And the people were up all that day and all that night and all the next day, and they gathered the quail. He who had the least gathered 10 omer, and they spread them out for themselves all around the camp, and the meat was still between their teeth before it was chewed, and the wrath of Jehovah burned against the people of Jehovah, and Jehovah struck the people with an exceeding great plague. Then he called the name of that place Kibroth Hattaavah, because there they buried the people who had lusted. They buried the people who had lusted. In 1 Corinthians chapter 10, we read that again about what happens. Remember that? Shaul constantly goes back to this 1 Corinthians 10. And we need to really, and I know my time's up, but let me cover this 1 Corinthians 10 real quick. And it starts off again, we're repeating it again. For I do not wish you to be ignorant, brothers, that all our fathers were under a cloud and passed through the sea. They had the cover. They were under the cloud. They had everything they needed. And were all immersed in the Moshe, in the cloud and in the sea, and all ate the same spiritual food, and they drank the same spiritual drink. They drank from the spiritual rock that followed. That rock was Messiah. However, with most of them, Elohim was not well pleased, for they were laid low in the wilderness, and these became examples for us. So this plague became an example. He laid them low in the wilderness because the reason they got this meat, because they complained about what they didn't have, yet they had everything they needed. Everything they needed, they had. He was trying to get them to quit wanting to go back to the garlics and the melons and the leeks and the fish, the handout. Why do you want to go back? I'm handing it out to you right now. But what he was handing out was shedding light on what they needed to do and their responsibility. It was showing that what was hidden in the dark, now you see it. Now you see that you can't have aught against your brother. Now you see that. You see that? And you can't cover your neighbor's stuff. You see that? That's what this light would do. It would constantly do that. You can't have another man's wife. You see that? See, when you're having fish and the garlics and the melons to hand out and you do nothing for it, you're not working for it, it's a subsidy, you get relaxed and you get lazy and you don't want to work no more. It creates an irresponsibility. But when you're given the cover and the food, of the light of whatever that necessary food that you need to bring light in your life, when the menorah is lit and it's shining on you, it's telling you what you got to do, naturally you're going to not want it. You know, people make statements, man, I don't like going to church. Every time I go to church, I feel like I need to repent. So what they do, they find a place where their ears are getting tickled, where they don't have a need to repent because they feel like I've done all the repenting I need to do when I accepted Yeshua. Forget that I have some dark moments in my life throughout the week. Forget that I slipped in the club last week. But now I'm here on this Shabbat. You say people suffer from that? Listen, let's get our head out the sand. People suffer from that. I'm talking about they claim Christianity and yet still do those type of things that are of the world. And Yeshua says clearly, he says when you're in me, you're not of the world no more. We're part of him. We're part of his family, part of his community. And these became examples for us so that we should not lust after evil as indeed they lusted. He says they're examples so we don't lust like they lusted. That's what caused it to happen. They had a lust for it. In Galatians 5:16 it says, I say walk in the spirit and you shall not accomplish the lust of the flesh. You do what? You walk in the spirit. You won't accomplish the lust of the flesh. Because what caused them to do it was their lust for what they used to have. And now we see that he's delivered us from that. And he's provided what we need. And everything we need is satisfied in our service toward Yeshua. Everything we need. There's nothing you lack. So he said, well, I feel like I'm lacking. I can tell you, the only reason you feel like you're lacking is because you said no to the last thing he said you need to look at. He's not going to tell you about four other things that you hadn't responded to the first thing you said. You got to go respond to that first thing. Now, these are just piling up. They're piling up. They're getting heavy and heavier. The weights and sins that so easily beset us become heavier and heavier because we won't deal with the situation. And he takes us strategically through the process to deal with our situations on a daily basis. It's what's called being sanctified. We've been justified by faith through Yeshua. For grace you're saved through faith. No doubt about it. Thank God for that. That's a one-time event that's happened, been given to you and I. We did nothing for that. It was given to us for by grace you're saved through faith. But then you got to go through sanctification. You got to be cleansed with the cleansing. Just like the Levites. They were Levites. But then he says, take the Levites. What he said? He said, take the Levites and separate them from me. In the 8th chapter of Numbers, he tells us, separate them. Cleanse them up. Do this. Do this. So he's showing that process that has to happen. So this entire Torah portion, there's so many wonderful principles. If we could just take the time to go through each line, verse by verse, could you imagine how long that would take for us to have to do that? Just this one Torah portion. If we did every verse and explained where its connection is in the renewed writings and showed all that to you. So what I did, I put it together as best I could in the presentation. You could take some time to look at it for yourself. But there's so many principles that we have, and we can't give up on it. What you want to do is you want to look at 2 Peter chapter 1, starting with verse 1, and you want to read it all the way through to verse 9. You want to look at 1 John chapter 2, and you want to read 1 John verse 15 through 17, where he says, do not love the world, nor that which is in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. Because all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eye, the pride of life is not of the Father, but is of the world. And the world passes away in the lust of it. But the one doing the desire of Elohim remains forever. Remains forever. How many want to do the will of Elohim? I do. And the only way we're going to know what the will, what his will is, we've got to study about what his will is. We've got to learn what he likes and he dislikes, his dislikes are. So again, remember I said that was 1 John. That's all renewed writings. I said that was 2 Peter. These are all renewed writings that we have been given very clear instructions on what to do. So I appreciate your time this morning. I thank God for you.